All righty. Well, hello, everyone. Very, very happy Monday. Gorgeous day, as always. You know, each day, each and every day is unique. Each and every day is unique. Each and every moment is unique, actually. It's funny that that which is constant, that which is the same, that which never changes, can love and appreciate uniqueness so much. But for some reason, that seems to be the recurring theme in my focus today. It's just happening naturally. But how marvelous. I mean, gosh darn marvelous. If I can use some beaver cleaver exclamations. How gosh darn marvelous each and every moment is. You know, this morning one thing I saw, it only lasted a moment, but I saw three birds. I've never seen this before. Three birds cuddled up together in the seat of one of our lawn chairs on the deck. They were just, you know, laying there like little bitty baby puppies might, just kind of cuddled up together. But these were adult birds. And then Jamie saw them and started towards them and they flew away. And right now, you know, right there, you can't see out my window, but right there, there's a bush that, you know, probably some people would say needs to be trimmed. What's happening is the bush is on the other side of my privacy fence, but it's sticking through the fence. And so what I see are the ends of one limb, I guess you would call it, bush limb. I don't know if that's right. I know there's a tree limb. And then the wind is blowing a little bit, and so the leaves are kind of, you know, shaking a little bit. And then just the way the sun's shining on them, some of the leaves are in the shade. They look dark green. Some of them are in the sun. They look lighter green. Some of them are kind of turned up towards the sun in a way where they're just shining. And then I won't even get into that crack in the fence. That crack itself has a uniqueness to it that is pretty dang amazing, actually. And then Jamie just burped. I once read that dogs don't burp, but Jamie appears to. She makes some sound that sounds like a burp every now and then. So we are here today for the 7 steps to awakening. And we are going to be starting today on number 226, which is a part of step 2. And I am copying the link, pasting it in the room, and giving it to you at this time. If anyone is on the radio listening in and you want to join us, the website that you go to is RDA7, which is the digit 7. It is not spelled out. RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. Again, that is RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. Once you find your way there, click on step 2 from the menu bar, and then find the numbering sequence, which will allow you to find your way to 226. That is where we are beginning. And Lynn says her dogs burp all the time. So apparently whoever wrote that on the internet, wherever I read that at one time, and that person just didn't know. All right, why don't we have a few moments of silence. Amen. All right, so we are going to begin with number 226 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. If you have the book, I am beginning on page 49. We are reading from the teachings of Ramana Maharshi, which have been put into poetic form by Muruganar, originally in a book called The Garland of Guru's Sayings, one of my personal all-time favorite books. It's like, you know, the Bible to me, you know, like just one of my favorite books. I don't know how else to say that. So, beginning with number 226. Some argue. Why in the heck would they want to do that? Oh my goodness, all right. Oh my, hold on. I'm coming back, I think. Oh my goodness, all right. Oh, that just struck me in a funny way. Some argue. Goodness. Okay, now my eyes are all watery, which doesn't help in the reading. Okay. Hello, Jamie. Some argue, though divisible and split up into parts, the world we know so well, how could it be unreal? We refute it, saying, wholeness, too, is a criterion of reality. Now, some of you, I think, were here last night. Last night, we looked at a criterion of reality called permanence, being eternal. And now we have wholeness. But Jamie would like to go outside, so let me take her out, and then we'll get back to it. Some argue, though divisible and split up into parts, the world we know so well, how could it be unreal? We refute it, saying, wholeness, too, is a criterion of reality. Oh, and Lynn is telling me that the recording was just heard in the room from last night, so this is an easy continuation then, not a split up in time. So why don't we go ahead and click on number 226, and we'll read from the journal. One essence is truth. Instead of accepting the differences seen as truth, seek to know only one essence. Do not give up until one is all that is known. The people arguing in the quote were basically saying, regardless of the fact that, you know, there's many different things in the world, many separate parts in the world, we know the world is true because we experience it. And that's actually a very interesting thought, and it's not one to be too quickly brushed aside. I think it's foolish to believe someone over your own direct experience. I think it's foolish. But what's happened for me in step two, which we are just beginning, and we'll be on probably for quite a while, what's happened for me in step two is that a clarity has arrived on the difference between experience and direct experience. There is a very clear and distinct difference between experience and direct experience. And when something is experienced, you can't really say for a fact that it's true. Because experience is based on perception, and perception is based on a filter of beliefs, a filter of memories, a filter of thoughts that are highly faulty. And so when seeing occurs through this filter, what is seen, although it may be experienced, is not necessarily true. All right, hold on. Jamie wants back in. Without getting into metaphysics, just within the human experience, I'm certain we have all had experiences that we later found were not true. You know, as children, we may have experienced the fear of the monster in the closet, which seemed very real to us. I remember for me, there was a monster outside my window every night. It turns out, you know, when I was older and able to see outside that window differently, it was a telephone pole. But when I was younger, it wasn't a telephone pole, it was a monster, and it was very, very frightening to me. So, these people who are arguing, whoever they were, that are being mentioned in this quote, arguing, their basis for stating that the world is real is that we know it so well. In other words, we experience it. And because we experience it, it has to be true. But that's not true, or that would have had to have been a monster outside my window. I experienced a monster, right? One thing that has become very clear to me as I have moved forward with step two is that experience is not a basis for determining reality or fact. Perception is not a basis for determining reality or fact. In fact, what I have come to see is the only basis for determining reality is direct experience, which means it's not at all observed, it's not seen through any filter at all, no matter how subtle. It is known directly by beingness, by being it. That which I am is known. That which I am is fact. Everything else is questionable. And the everything else includes what I think I am, but I don't want to go that deeply into it right now. But it's reasonable for us, if we want to discover truth, if we want to know truth as a direct experience, so that it is beyond all question, beyond all doubt, it is reasonable for us to stop arguing that our experience is fact. Last night I talked about dove. I used dove as an example. If we were all to go into a room somewhere and, you know, some facilitator handed out a piece of paper to each of us and said, write down dove, write down dove, not just the word dove, but write down what dove is, what you know of dove, how you feel about dove, everything about dove, write down dove. And if we all sat there and looked at our memories of dove and our experiences of dove and our perceptions of dove and wrote down dove and then compared our notes, they wouldn't be the same. So how can we say that our perceptions, our experience? People argue that, and I'm sorry, Dove, I'm sure he knows this is true. Every now and then somebody will contact me telling me how evil Dove is, which I want to get into that. How evil Dove is. Evil Dove. And they tell me, but this is my experience. As if their experience matters. Experience is through a filter that can be so dang warped that experience can be, and in fact often is, completely wrong and highly individualized. So to argue that anything is true based on my experience of it is meaningless. I'm only pointing out this is the illusion I believe in. That's all I'm doing. This is the illusion I believe in. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. You could call it stubbornness, actually. It's stubbornness. Hi, my love.
I have a question.
What's your question?
Do you think Danielle would mind if I used her straightener?
I do not think Danielle would mind if you used her straightener. Now, number 226 in the journal says, one essence is truth. Instead of accepting the differences seen as truth, seek to know only one essence. Do not give up until one is all that is known. I interpret this as a request to me to be willing to doubt my own experience. That's what it is. And to be willing to continue to doubt my own experience until I've given this inner process called awakening the opportunity to complete itself. So the question is, for you, I guess, are you willing to doubt your own experience in order to discover and rely on direct experience instead, which is the evidence of reality? So I started this off by saying, I think it's foolish to go against your own experience. But that doesn't mean that I think it's foolish to question your own experience. Because what happens in this process, at least as I'm seeing it now, as we begin to question our own experience, we actually go deeper and deeper into our own experience from what you could call different perspectives within ourselves. Until we see for ourselves that our experience is not worthy of the weight we were giving it before in determining what's true and what's not true. And we discover that direct experience that's unquestionable. So what that means for me is that when someone tells me, or when a book tells me, the world is not real, I don't blindly accept that. I don't put aside my experience. My experience when I started this was that the world was real. I don't put aside my experience and say, okay, I'll believe you. That's the foolishness I refer to. Instead, I go into my experience with an openness and a questioning to see if what is being said, if what is being taught is true, to see for myself. One essence is truth. Instead of accepting the differences seen as truth, seek to know only one essence. Do not give up until one is all that is known. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 227. And let's copy that. Or I'm copying that, you don't have to. And paste that in the room. There's 227 for you. And I'm going to read number 227 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. The wise can know how deem as real a world divided and destroyed by time's wheel. Whole, eternal, perfect, ever-shining, and transcending time and space, such is the nature of reality. Again, the wise can know how deem as real a world divided and destroyed by time's wheel. Whole, eternal, perfect, ever-shining, and transcending time and space, such is the nature of reality. So what is the wise? The wise, I would say, are not those who blindly accept, believe that the world is not real because they read it in a book or heard it from a teacher. Nor are the wise those who believe their experience without questioning it, even though they know the perception is faulty. The wise are those who question their perception, question their experience in a deep and introspective and, in my experience, guided way, until a seeing comes that is so clear it is unquestionable. Number 227 in the journal says, the process of awakening is a process of going before the limited mind. Mind is like a prism that fractures and changes light. But light remains pure, whole, and unchanged. This can be seen without the prism. So if you imagine with me for a moment that we have a light shining from a source, a lamp. We're in like a laboratory environment. So we have a light shining. And we see just the clear light. That's all we see is the light. And then we take a prism and we put the prism between the light and what it's reflecting on. And now the prism is broken up into many different colors. Right? The mind is the prism. The mind is that filter or that interference that when the light projects through it, what comes out the other side seems to be different than just the pure wholeness of the light. It seems to be many different, separate, and distinct images. What's interesting about the prism, actually, is I didn't really know anything about a prism. So after this writing came, I actually did a little research on the prism. And I found an interesting controversy, a very interesting controversy to me. I found that there were some scientists who said that the prism actually shows what's really in light. So without the prism, when you're seeing just the light, they say you're not seeing reality. They say the light requires the interference of the prism in order to see the reality, which are the colors. Of course, there are other scientists that said that is ridiculous, that once you interject an interference, such as a prism, then you've changed what was natural. And the result is not what was natural. What was natural was what was there before the interference. I thought that was an interesting controversy, because it's almost the same controversy of, is the world real or not? You know, we see the world because it is projected through the prism or the interference of the mind. And then some people say, that which I see with the mind, that is what is true. But what this teaching is saying is actually the opposite. It's saying, no, that which you see without the mind, that is what is true. The mind is the interference, like the prism is the interference. So the process of awakening is a process of going before the limited mind, before the interference was introduced. Mind is like a prism that fractures and changes light, but light remains pure, whole, and unchanged. This can be seen without the prism. Take away the mind, take away the prism, and you'll discover what is there before the interference was introduced, and that's what is natural. So this is agreeing with those scientists. Let's go ahead and scroll down and click on number 228. And for those of you that are new to the room, I will also post a link to number 228 in the room. There you are. And I'm going to read number 228 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. The goings on of the empirical world. True seeming and beguiling in the mind's borrowed light are nothing but illusions in the bright light of pure awareness. Now, I'll tell you what this reminds me of, is because I am certain that I am one of the people, once the prism is introduced, I'm going to say, ah, look at all those pretty colors. I mean, think about it. The light's there, and we're probably not paying too much attention to the light. But then somebody sticks the prism in, and we're like, oh, wow, look at that, right? We're mesmerized by what is created by the interference. Well, that's basically what 228 says. The goings on of the empirical world, true seeming and beguiling in the mind's borrowed light, are nothing but illusions in the bright light of pure awareness. So it's really saying that we are being fascinated by that which is not true, by that which is only a temporary appearance and requires an interference in order to even appear. And we're just amazed by it, just like we would be amazed by the colors of the prism. Like, ah, oh, wow. And the light, once the prism is put in and we see those pretty colors, we're not paying any attention to the light, are we? The light is like forgotten. The colors are what we're focused on. Let's look at 228 in the journal. That which is derived from influence, although it may be perceived, is not pure, uninfluenced truth. So we may be able to see the colors that are projected by the prism. We may be fascinated by the colors that are projected by the prism. We may not even want the prism taken away because we really prefer the colors that are projected by the prism. But that doesn't make the colors the pure, uninfluenced truth. The fact that we prefer them, the fact that we're focused only on them, does not change the fact that as soon as that prism is taken away, they disappear. because they aren't the reality. That which is derived from influence, although it may be perceived, is not pure, uninfluenced truth. And if some of you, I know, have been listening to my series of teachings, some of you, I think, probably have not, so you probably don't even realize this is a series. But if you have been listening to the series, then you know one thing I've talked about is that all of this really started for me, all of this awakening process really started for me many, many years ago when I said a prayer. And that prayer was that I wanted to know truth. And I said, I don't care what it is. Well, this is telling me that which is derived from influence, although it may be perceived, is not that truth you sought. The colors projected from the prism may be beautiful. They may be fascinating. You may love them, but it's not the truth you sought. And then the question becomes, do you still want to see the truth? Are you willing to let the prism be taken away to see the truth? That which is derived from influence, although it may be perceived, is not pure, uninfluenced truth. Why don't we scroll down and click on number 229? Here's a link in the room for those of you who aren't in the journal already. First, I will read number 229 from the book In the Seven Steps to Awakening. Only mad folk, like people, that type of folk, in case you can't understand my strange accent. Only mad folk, perplexed because they deem the false world to be real, find joy in this illusion. The truly wise find joy in nothing but awareness which is being. So the truly wise are those who have investigated the experience and discovered directly the difference between that which is not true and that which is. And although, like the rest of us, at one time they were completely fascinated by the colors projected by the prism, what they find once they have done this investigation is that what they truly love is that which is natural, that which is real, that which is there before interference was introduced. And those of us who are not those wise ones who have completed this investigation and this discovery are referred to here as mad folk, which is similar to Jesus's description of us when he calls us insane. To be so mesmerized by these colors projected by the prism when they aren't even real. Loco, Nikki says. Local, which I totally understand. Local, meaning separate, independent, individual beings. We're both loco. We're loco because we think we're local and we love being local, right? That makes us loco. Like a local color, yeah. I think I'm one of the colors projected from the prism. I do not realize I am the light. All right, let's go to the journal, number 229. It is time to give up ideas of happiness because of some person, relationship, event, or situation in the world. Any idea of happiness because is an attachment to the world. Every attachment to the world keeps illusion in place through desiring illusion. Dive into the joy of being, which is always present. Let this be the only source of happiness. When the joy of being is the only source of happiness, happiness reigns constant, attachment free. So I told you all today that for some reason, I do not have an explanation, but for some reason today, I'm finding myself fascinated by uniqueness. Actually, I just realized that's kind of like if I'm fascinated by the colors of the prism, except it's actually a little different. What's a little different about it is that even though today I'm actually just noticing uniqueness and being fascinated by it, it's almost like I'm seeing a level of detail that I don't always see when I look at things. I'm not happy because of that. Tomorrow this phenomenon, whatever it is that's causing me to be aware in the way I am today, may be gone. And if I'm attached to looking out and noticing the details that I'm noticing today, if I think that this is wowzer to the point that, you know, there's some kind of a craving within me to keep this perception that's happening right now, and then tomorrow I wake up and it's gone, there's going to be a disappointment. There's going to be a sense of loss. My experience in the world, although I wasn't really aware of it until recently, but it's always been my experience. I just wasn't aware of it. My experience in the world is one of constant change. You know? Constant change. So this perception that I'm having today, there's no reason to think that this is, you know, permanent because it wasn't here yesterday. So if it wasn't here yesterday, then we know it's not permanent because it has a beginning, and that beginning is today. And if it has a beginning, then it will also have an end. It's actually a result of an interference. Now, at the same time, the entire time I've been in this world experiencing change, I've been experiencing something else that I also was not aware of. And that's constancy. That's something that's just always been here. Regardless of whether today I'm seeing details or I'm not seeing details, it's always here. I think the best thing to call it is that which cannot be named, but I know it is what I am because it's totally inseparable from me. It's always here. There's no way I can separate this constant awareness, this constant beingness, this constant isness from me. It cannot be separated. So it can also be called me or I. If that isness, just being, if that becomes the source of my joy, then I'm always happy, and at the same time, I'm able to enjoy the changing images. It's not like the colors of the prism suddenly become dull. If the colors of the prism are dancing in front of me, I can laugh and giggle and even reach out and try to grab the colors and have fun playing with them. But then when they disappear, there's no loss. Because my real joy is just the beingness, the isness, the presence of I. The mistake that we make in the world is saying, I'm happy because today there's some perception here where I am seeing detail more brilliantly than I really do, and I'm noticing uniqueness everywhere, and I love this so much. This is, well, I must be enlightened now. This is amazing the way I see today. And then I become attached to that. I think I'm happy because. And then if tomorrow I wake up and this temporary way of seeing is gone, then it's like, oh, I lost something. I must have screwed up something. I must have thought a thought I wasn't supposed to think. If I think I'm happy because some friend likes me, you know, this friend, I really enjoy this friend, and she really enjoys me, and we have fun together, and we giggle together, well, you know, and I'm really happy to have such a strong friendship with a person, someone I can share everything with, someone that is always there for me. Well, what happens if someday something happens that this friend is no longer there? Maybe she misinterprets something and she stops wanting to be my friend. Maybe she just grows in a different direction. Maybe she dies. What number 229 is saying is that if we can love just being, then we're loving the one thing that's never going to end, even though everything else will shift and change and come and go. If we can settle into loving just being, then happiness is constant. It is time to give up ideas of happiness because of some person, relationship, event, or situation in the world. Any idea of happiness because is an attachment to the world. Every attachment to the world keeps illusion in place through desiring illusion. Dive into the joy of being, which is always present. Let this be the only source of happiness. When the joy of being is the only source of happiness, happiness reigns constant, attachment free. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 230A. Number 230A. And I will post that in the room. And I will read number 230 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. What is the self's self-transformation as the world? A twist of straw appearing as a snake? Look hard, you see no snake at all. There was no transformation, no creation, none, no world at all. Let's go directly to the journal. We're going to read number 230A. There is no world at all. One who interacts with a world or desires in the world is caught up and engaging in a mind-made illusion, hallucination. This is what you must decide. Do you prefer to keep, for as long as you can, this illusion of sense-perceived images that aren't really there? Or do you want, above everything else, to realize and know truth? If the latter is chosen, inward focus is the way. Become an expert at inward focus, regardless of what is perceived and regardless of what is thought. So again, if we imagine, you know, the example of the prism, we have light, clear light, someone creates and interjects the prism, and all of a sudden we have all of these amazing different colors, even dancing around. We've never had that before. They're amazing. They're fascinating. They're beautiful. But they're not real. The question is, would we rather struggle to hold that prism in place? And imagine that as you're holding the prism, it actually starts getting heavy, you know? It starts getting heavy. Your wrist starts to hurt. But we're so fascinated by the colors, we put up with the pain. The question is, do you really want the pain in order to have the colors? Or would you like to relax now and put down the prism and relax back into the truth, the light, being? That's the question. And you know, it's not a bad example because there is pain in trying to hold up the prism so that we continue to see the colors. The way we experience that in our human experience is by trying to control things. Somehow there's this feeling that we don't understand, we don't think about, but there's this feeling that everything's going to fall apart in any moment. And that feeling that anything is going to fall apart from any moment comes from a long-forgotten knowledge that it's not real. It's temporary. It is going to fall apart in any moment. That's just what's going to happen. It's not going to last. And there's knowledge here that it's not going to last. But if we're fascinated by it, that scares us. And so we struggle to try and keep it in place. Try and keep things from passing away, from changing. And a lot of suffering comes out of that, trying to control what cannot be controlled. It's like our wrist hurting from holding up the prism. Oh, hold on. This is Nima from my church. I might need to take this call. Hold on. Hello, Nima. I knew that's why you were calling, and I wanted to take the call. Thank you. We will be there tomorrow morning to finish the painting. Thanks for letting me know. Bye. All right. Danielle and I were helping paint at our Center for Inner Peace here, and a water pipe broke, and so we had to stop working, but now we're going to go back and finish because the water pipe is fixed. I knew that was the call, and I wanted to make sure I took it, and she knew that I understood that we were going to go back and finish the job. All right, so the question then here is, do you prefer to keep for as long as you can, especially knowing that you can't keep it forever, right? Do you prefer to keep, to struggle, to have your wrist hurt, to be in pain? Do you prefer to keep for as long as you can this illusion of sense-perceived images that aren't really there? Or do you want, above everything else, to realize and know truth? That's the question. It says this is what you must decide. And this is coming near the beginning of step two. Because, again, for me, what happened in step two was, is an inquiry process that is deeper than any inquiry or seeing process I've gone through before. But I'm assuming, based on reading this, that I had to have made this decision first. The inquiry process probably could not occur in the way it was if I'm like, actually I want to eat my steak and believe it's a steak. You know, remember that guy from The Matrix? he preferred the illusion. He didn't want to know the truth. He was tired of knowing the truth. He wanted to go back to eating his steak and thinking it was a steak. So the question is an inner question for me. Which do you want? Do you want to try and hold this together as long as you can? Or do you want truth above everything else? And then it says if the latter is chosen, meaning if truth is chosen, inward focus is the way. Which means I have to let go of being fascinated by the projected images, which includes letting go of reacting to the projected images, trying to control the projected images, believing my happiness is based on projected images, believing projected images are the cause of my suffering. I let go of all of that, and I just tune in within. And my experience is that I let within guide me in every moment, and that is, I'm grateful that is my experience. I let within guide me. In the language of Christianity, I am surrendered. And I'm happy with that. Inward focus is the way. Become an expert, a master, you could say, at inward focus. Regardless of what is perceived and regardless of what is thought. So it means it doesn't matter what those projected images do, you stay with the inward focus. That's what I would call surrendered. All right, let's scroll down and let's read 230b, the second part of the same quote. I'll read the quote quickly again from the Seven Steps to Awakening. The quote is, "What is the self's self-transformation of the world? A twist of straw appearing as a snake? Look hard. You see no snake at all. There was no transformation, no creation, none, no world at all." 230b. It is time to take full responsibility for the seeing, but this does not imply responsibility for the making. What is not there has not been made. Therefore, you cannot be responsible for making it. Okay, if we go back to the symbol that's been used all day today, which is the symbol of the prism. When the prism interferes with the light, there is the appearance of many different colors. Now, in foolishness, we could say, "I created those colors." But the reason I said in foolishness is because it's not true, because all you have to do is remove the prism and the colors disappear, which means they were not created. They were the temporary effect of an interference. A temporary effect of an interference. They had no reality to them. So you cannot say, "I created that." Not with wisdom, you can't. And yet I think many of us have gone through the phase on the spiritual path of thinking that we are creating or co-creating the world. That term is used so much, co-creating. We are co-creating the world. If we change our thoughts, which is kind of like maybe moving the prism a little bit, then we'll get a different projection, and that's a better creation. And so many of us have maybe tried to change our thoughts in order to get a different projection, which is a better creation. But what this is saying is no, not exactly. You're not quite understanding yet, because the projection is not real. You aren't actually creating or miscreating anything, because the only thing that's real is the light, not the colors, not the projection. So you aren't really responsible for the projection. That's not what you're responsible for. You're not responsible for the projection. But you do want to take responsibility for your perception. Diana has written, "I am creating my experience. Experience isn't real." That's perfect. your perception, your experience are the same. You do want to take responsibility for your perception or your experience, because your perception or your experience is based on how attached you are or how much you are believing that the projection is real. And in order to awaken to truth, that attachment or that believing needs to be undone. So you want to start taking responsibility for your experience. So if someone were to write on the board now, you know, Regina, you're full of shit. What the hell are you talking about? That's not what the Course teaches. If I feel offense, then I want to take responsibility for that feeling of offense. I want to realize there's some believing here in the projection. There's some believing that maybe my worth is based on what others think of me. And I want to notice that I believe that. I believe that my worth is based on what others think of me. And I want to see that that's a belief that is causing my experience. And it's a belief that's based on the belief that the colors that the prism projects are true. And I want to give willingness to see the foolishness in that belief, to really see the foolishness in that belief. Through whatever miracles are going to occur, through whatever guidance is going to occur, so that that belief can be undone. But what I don't need to say is that I attracted that experience because there's something wrong in me. You know, that's then taking responsibility for the creating or the making, as if the creating or the making was real or had some meaning. And that's a mistake that certainly many of us have made. Why do I keep attracting this as if this has some meaning, some reality to it, and therefore it's actually the cause of my suffering? Forget about, you're not responsible for the making because nothing's been made. But look at your experience, because your experience is showing you what you believe, and your believing is keeping the experience in place. But nothing has been made. Nothing exists other than the light, the truth. The rest is a false projection, a temporary appearance. There's no reality to it. So you can't be responsible for it. I am not responsible for whether you type in nice words or bad words, or no words at all, as I teach. I'm not responsible for that. I'm responsible for my perception of that. And this is actually a meaningful distinction, because if I believe I'm responsible for what you're typing in the room, I'm giving a meaning to the colors. I'm saying there's a reality there, and I made that reality. And that's an error. And if we want to wake up to truth, we also need to let go of error. It is time to take full responsibility for the seeing, the perceiving, my own experience. I got to take full responsibility for that. There's no one or nothing to blame. Nor is there anyone or anything to credit for my happiness. My experience comes only from me. From what I'm focused on, reality or falseness. It's the only cause of my experience. It is time to take full responsibility for the seeing, but this does not imply responsibility for the making. What is not there has not been made. Therefore, you cannot be responsible for making it. All right, that is it. And actually, I won't be back for a few weeks because I'm going to Israel. I'll be here Friday with Lynn, but I won't be back for Seven Steps for a few weeks. I'm going to miss 2 whole weeks, 3 weeks from this weekend. I will be back for Seven Steps. All right? And Dove, I'll write you a note about my dates. Okay, bye everyone.